The DCF Experience. Hello and welcome to the Mentoring and Coaching Podcast brought to you by the DCF Experience. I'm your host for today, David Fleming, and today's podcast is going to reveal more top tips for your recruitment development. As you know, the Mentoring and Coaching Podcast has top tips from me on your recruitment development, along with special guests from outside the industry who have successful sales, mentoring, and coaching businesses. Today's show is no different. So without further ado, let me introduce my next guest. Hi, Dr. Natalia. How are you?
Very, very good, David. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for agreeing to be on my show.
You're most welcome. Thank you for this amazing opportunity.
That's okay. How is, you're in Dubai, right? How is the weather? How's sunny Dubai?
It's not sunny. You won't believe it. It's raining. It is sandy. It's dark and it's cold.
Yeah, but that doesn't last for very long. From my experience of living there for 8 years, it's only temporary.
That's true. And summer will kick in very, very soon.
Yeah, so I found that, and actually one of the, not one of the main reasons, but I found after being there for 8 years, it just got so much hotter than it was when I first moved there. I just remember it being not as bad when I first got there. And then towards the end, it was as if it just didn't get cool until sort of December. And then you had a couple of months where it's not that great like now. And then suddenly it's microwave time again.
Yep, very, very true. I'm here since 11 years right now. And there's definitely a difference between 2008 and now, for sure.
Yeah, I originally moved there in 2010. So I just, it was always nice. But I just remember the summers, as it were, finishing, and you had more of a sort of just a nicer temperature for longer. And it just, I just feel like even in October and November now, it was, it's still roasting. Still roasting.
True.
Well, I really appreciate you being on the show, and I know that you're very busy. So for the benefit of our listeners, I'd like to just give a bit of an intro into you. Mm-hmm. And then obviously we're going to talk about you and your experience so that you can provide some value to me and hopefully to our listeners. So I know that you're obviously a keynote speaker because I've been following you for a long time on LinkedIn. I believe you're in a very fortunate position to be a LinkedIn influencer as well, which obviously it must be a huge honor based on the fact that it's got 500 or nearly 600 million members. So to be anywhere near the top of that list, I'm sure is a huge honor. I'm a huge fan of all of your sort of personal branding and coaching strategies that you have with your personal videos and short form and long form content. So I know that we're going to explore a little bit about that in today's show. And then obviously as you have on your LinkedIn profile, right in amongst all of the flags and pictures, there's a nice little picture of a unicorn, which I can't wait to talk about because I'm wondering where that's come from and how that's either matured or developed or originated from, because I'm sure that's a funny story.
Yes.
So, I mean, for me, I think for those that either are not following you or haven't seen you on LinkedIn, why don't you give us just a bit of an intro into your background, you know, what you're doing at the moment and sort of where the journey began to get you where you are now?
Yes, I gladly do that. So first of all, thank you so much for these kind and flattering words. And yes, we will dig deeper into the unicorn after a while. So who nice. Am I? What do? I am a personal branding strategist. So I, at the moment, help coaches and experts and consultants who left corporate to do their own thing. I help them how to market themselves with the focus on LinkedIn, but also some offline work. So how to build an impactful personal brand to be seen, to be heard, and to spread your message. That's what I do. My background is social science. I have a Master of Arts and a Doctor of Philosophy. And I first worked in the government sector here in the UAE in the educational area. Then I worked in the private economy I worked in the role of a marketing manager, but the industry was logistics / warehousing. Then I quit my job. I went on a very long sabbatical to question everything that I've ever done and locked myself away for 9 months, did a lot of self-work, healing, mentoring, coaching, meditation, working with shamans and healers and everything. And then I figured out that I need to create my own thing. You know, the perfect job doesn't exist unless you create it. And I realized being a personal branding strategist, being a keynote speaker is fun for me. So this is who I am, what I do right now. In the near future, I don't know, a lot of people say that I'm funny. I have a very awkward way of humor. So maybe with the time turning more into a social critic, maybe even stand-up comedian, could be something. I'm reflecting on this opportunity and idea.
Yeah, in the UK, we call that a dry sense of humor.
Yeah, exactly.
which to a lot of people might seem a bit awkward, but if you're wired like me, I find it hilarious. So I, you know, if you follow people like, I don't know if you watch any stand-up by people like Ricky Gervais. You know,
yes.
Ricky Gervais?
Yes, yeah. Just recently watched a show. I love that guy.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah, so I watched his latest stand-up. It's absolute comical genius. I mean, it's just, but it's not for the... It's not for anybody that has either a personal attachment or that would take anything personally, because the way he talks about everything is so brutal and so on point that you could almost take it as a sort of personal dig at either your belief system, your emotional system, your friends network, anything. But really, it's just really good, intelligent stand-up comedy, which I love because I find it, it's thought-provoking. His subject for comedy is thought-provoking, not just rant-based.
Exactly. Like. Absolutely. Yeah,
and I really love that. How long have you been in Dubai then?
Dubai, yeah, since 2008. So that means 11 years, yeah.
Okay. What made you go there in the first place?
Well, when I was studying, I was told that I need to have international work experience to have a great career and to make it in life. And when somebody or people told me that, I was like, I was studying, but I was also dancing. So I was on the highest level of my dance career. And I looked at all of the other people who went abroad for a year, for half a year, whatever. And they came back and they were full of debts. So they had a money problem. They needed to study longer. And everything that they've done when they were abroad were, you know, dating and having fun. And I was like, no, I'm a late bloomer. I don't want to party. I don't know what that is. I want to finish my studies and I love dancing. So I had a conversation with the universe and said, listen, let me finish, let me dance. And then the first job that I get will be abroad. And yeah, my former best friend got the opportunity here and got an opportunity here in the UAE and told me about a vacancy, and I applied and came here and tested if I can live and work here as a blonde woman, because I was a little bit scared of by what I've you know, read by the media, and I don't know how much of that was true, and realized it's so different from
I know
yeah right
it's so different yeah. right yeah. yeah and I find that it's hilarious that the people formulate judgment on Dubai based on what they read on the front of either the Sun newspaper in the UK or some online tabloids in whatever country you're from. And before I was in recruitment, I worked in the music business and partied a lot. So I was always looking for things to do outside of work that you would think, oh, I could never do that in Dubai, you know. And people say you can't go out drinking, have fun. You can't go and party. You can't listen to house music. There's no dance. It's got one of the biggest scenes in the world. I mean, and I've been to all over Europe, America, Asia, and partied all over. So it's a great place. You just got to learn how to work within the dynamics for which they set.
Absolutely. You know,
I think that's the same anywhere, right? I mean, it's very easy to go off track in any country in the world if you behave in an inappropriate way, as it were. So, but I don't think anybody really decides to move to Dubai. I think it sort of either chooses them or something happens and then they end up there for some reason.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, all of that's really interesting. And I think today's, as you know, the reason I wanted to bring you on the show is because from someone that's worked in recruitment for 14 years, but is now moving into mentoring and coaching and training, my podcasts are around, or they're designed to help people within my industry, but also potentially inspire people from outside of the industry, which is why I'm bringing guests like yourself and other people in to talk about, you know, what they do and how they do it in the other industries that they work in, to see whether there's some crossover with the industry that I work in. So how long have you been in personal branding, coaching, LinkedIn influencing? How long have you been doing that?
4.5 years now.
Okay. And when you got into it, how did you decide that that's what you were, other than the fact you knew you wanted to work for yourself, how did you pick these things specifically? Or was it all of those things at the start, or have they evolved over the last 4 years?
Yeah, they've definitely evolved. I started with writing because I was very frustrated about the way how I need to write academically. And my PhD supervisor very often said, you cannot use humor, don't use sarcasm. That's something you cannot do in your PhD. And I was like, it needs to get out of my system.
There's a dark comic in there somewhere, isn't there, for you? Definitely. Yes. I want the first ticket to the show. I definitely do.
Thanks. Note it down. So I was like, oh, what on earth can I do? And somehow I learned about the idea that blogs exist and that you can blog, how blogging functions. So I decided, okay, you know, that would be my creative outlet, and set up a blog from scratch. And after a year, a lot of people liked it, and I got feedback and comments from all around the world. And a friend of mine that I haven't seen for a year said, you know, what you do is amazing, but that's not so powerful, as not as impactful as you could be. And do you know what your next step is? And I said, listen, if I knew what the next step was, that would be it.
Of course I would, yeah. Right? Thanks for the golden nugget, right?
Exactly. Tell me. And he said, it's public speaking. And I said, forget it. I'm German. I'm not fluent in English. People don't understand me, and they really don't understand my humor. So why should I go on a stage? No. I'm not doing that. And he, you know, he told me about the whole thing. And to cut a long story short, I went to a Toastmasters meeting, and they dragged me towards the stage, and I needed to have a 1-minute speech about a random topic that I learned about when I was on the stage. And I realized that I could make people listen to me, I could make them think, and I could make them laugh. And I realized I don't like to be on the stage at the moment, but I love what I can trigger in people, because I think the world, there's so much suffering, there's so much negativity, and I think that I'm here on this planet to somehow make life easier for others, to solve their problems, to make them think and laugh. That was just triggered there. So I realized, okay, apparently the speaking thing needs to be part of my job. And what I was also obsessed with was the idea, what do people need to do in order to become successful, to live fulfilling lives, and what is the American dream, and how does social media work? So these were the things that I found super interesting. So I read about it, I started writing about it, started speaking about it, until one day a lady approached me and said, Natalia, here, there's this book. It's super thick and long. I'm very busy. I cannot read it. You do that anyway. Can you read it for me and then teach me everything in that book? And I had a look at the book, and it said personal branding. And I was like, oh, of course, yes, that's what I do. When do we start? Personal branding found me.
Wow. Okay. Interesting. Is there actually a real book?
Yeah, it's a German book, funnily enough, because the lady was a German, and the German book was called Impression Management. So Impression Management is another word for personal branding, is another word for self-marketing. And I realized that with my background in human behavior, in societies, in culture, with this millennial FOMO interest and in social media, that's the best thing for me. And this is why I decided to read that book, test everything in that book for me, myself, and I, for my personal brand, teach that woman, and then see what happens after that. And I realized, wow, I need to create a structure, I need to create a program. And then I started teaching people, or coaching, or consulting, as I call it, because I actually do a mix. I do a mix between coaching and consulting, because for me, these things are just tools. And this is why I put them together, because I think this way people will learn better.
Yes, and it's a very interesting one. There's a couple of things there that are really interesting. One around the younger generation and how they're going to ultimately consume the information that's in front of them. And we're going to talk a little bit about online and offline as we go. And then the other one is, you know, the differences between mentoring, coaching, and training. And nearly all of my guests on my show, have a different view on them, because they're either doing all three of them, or like you just said, you've created a combination of the two, you know, consulting, if you like, you know, coach-zulting, if you like. So for me, it's I think a lot of the things that we're going to cover today are going to be around that area, because for me, the value in every company in order to be successful is in their people. And recruitment is an industry, you know, it's a multi-billion dollar industry globally, but it has probably one of the highest turnovers of staff that I've ever seen. you know, the average consultant might last 9 or 12 months, you know, either through the fact that they're not trained, they don't know what they're doing, they don't know about the job, they get frustrated. They're not really told what the job is when they join, other than the fact you can earn loads of money. And actually, that's not always the way. You know, they may want to, get promoted faster than they do, and therefore they leave to go somewhere else because it's not as fast as you wanted it to be. They think they can move forward even if they don't perform. All of these things factor into the reasons why people would leave. But ultimately, companies that I've worked for haven't spent enough time putting all of this in place. So you almost can cover every objection that that a new joiner would have so that they never leave. So for me, it's the same as the training I do. So if I was to go into a classroom and teach people on how to do business development or meetings, I would write out every question that's ever been asked to me in recruitment, put them into categories, and then tell everyone to go right and memorize them all. So as soon as somebody says something, you've memorized what to say. And then you have a strategy for answering, you know, like agree, confirm, and then overcome type thing. You know, but you don't, no one does it in recruitment when you hire staff. It's not like these are all the things, you know, you never even get a booklet of all the things that are going to happen to you in your first 12 months. And therefore, we're going to overcome them by training you so that you can feel like you can do better. And for me, I don't know why that hasn't happened. I'm not sure. But from your side, you know, I'm keen to find out a couple of sort of early successes that you might have had from this process, you know, within your coaching and consulting area. Can you give us an idea of some of the big successes you've had in your last 4 years?
Yeah, I think one of my first or biggest successes was when I was paid for speaking on a stage in front of 300 students. That was the first paid speaking gig, which was in, I think, 2016. That was my first big success because I couldn't understand that intellectually, yeah, that people would pay me for something that I'm good at and that I enjoy doing as like, yeah, wow. So that was a very profound experience for me. That was fantastic. And then was it last year? Yeah, I think it was last year when I had a huge project in North America with Bosch, who invited me over to support their employees because they've worked on a very, very sophisticated employee advocacy program. They looked for a coach, a strategist who was able to explain personal branding in a way that, let's say, the 55-year-old Sarah would understand it, but also the 20-year-old Peter, and who doesn't take himself, you know, herself too seriously. So there you go. This is how they found me. And I think these were two big successes in totally different areas that were important for me.
Yeah, nice. And it's a funny one as well, because I don't know about you, but I follow a lot of the same or similar people online. So therefore you naturally think that everybody is doing what you're doing, when actually 99% of people are not doing what you're doing, because, you know, I think there's some frightening facts on LinkedIn. I think it's 550 members, but only 1 million videos go up every day. So that's not even a, you know, versus the Facebook or the Instagrams who are video, probably a lot more video heavy, right? Yeah. But if you follow a lot of the same people, like I do with you and Neil Patel and Gary Vee and Grant Cardone, and the list is endless, a lot of their stuff that they do all of the work that they do is through video. So therefore, my consumption of content is through video. So therefore I naturally think that the whole world should consume content on video. And then it's supported by the fact that LinkedIn say that 90% of all content in the future on their platform will be consumed by content. So they're backing that up, right? So I sort of think that I'm not going crazy, but you made a very interesting point. The difference between there may be a 55-year-old person that really wants to get into personal branding and have a really good online presence, versus the one that just simply isn't bothered. And then you naturally assume that everyone who's in their 20s, who's grown up with a smartphone, wants to be online, when actually they don't all want to be online. I know loads who don't necessarily, other than the silly platforms like TikTok and other stuff that the kids look at. But apart from that, they like other things. They had their hobbies are not necessarily being online. So I think you made a very good point there. I think you definitely see more of the people that you're following than that. And then that formulates more of a sort of dominant opinion, if you like. Mm-hmm. Have you, I think for me then, the key thing that I'd like to talk about next is, what value do you see sort of coaching? I mean, you've mentioned coaching and consulting, so consulting. What value do you think that can bring to organizations today?
I think in the end, the target of the majority of organizations, that's at least how I understand economic theory and the reality that I see out there, is increased productivity and efficiency. I mean, that's the target of, I would say, most probably, the other way around. I think that's one of the core targets of every business out there, because that's what business is all about. And then some businesses also think a little bit deeper. They also want to make an impact, and they want to change the world, and they want to leave the world a little bit better. So, but these arguments, unfortunately, still nowadays are not so predominant when people look for a coach or a consultant or a mentor. So in the end, they would hire somebody in this field to make sure that processes run smoother, that people feel happier, that they're more productive, that they stay longer in the company. And I think that in the end, it can create a mindset shift in the employees. It can find new ways how both the company and the employees understand each other better, or start to finally communicate in a more honest and mature way. Because what we often forget is that a company or business is also just people, that people are afraid, and sometimes information are not shared, and some people don't understand why they do what they do, or what the company actually stands for that they work in. So I think that a lot of communication issues internally, like between the employees and the employer, but also within each human being, can be clarified. So it's about clarification, communication, clarity, thinking, finding own unique answers, and through that being more productive and more efficient.
Excellent. And what experience have you had of either being a mentoree or mentoring individuals?
What I find very interesting is that, like, the mentors that I work with, we have a, how would I call this? There is a term for it, reverse mentoring relationship. So my mentors are in their 40s or 50s, and I'm in my early 30s. So what I find very interesting in these relationships is that I'm good at certain things for my age, of my experience, and these ladies and gentlemen are very good and experienced in their fields because of, you know, their age, maturity, and et cetera. But there are certain things that I cannot know how to, and the other party as well. So we look at each other as human beings, as flawsome human beings. Flawsome is a mix between awesome and full of flaws. So we come from a place of vulnerability. I love that term.
You love that, don't you? That's two gems you've put together just in 10 minutes. You know, like, I'm loving this. I'm not, anytime I use these phrases, I'm gonna tag you in on LinkedIn, definitely.
Thank you. Thanks. I appreciate that. So we are both, like, we really come from a place of vulnerability, of honesty, and of, I want to grow. Show me what I cannot see, or what I'm not courageous enough to face on my own. And tell me in a mature, honest way. Don't tell me that I'm, oh crap. Tell me that to grow. Like, the purpose is that together we become stronger and better and evolve. This is what I absolutely love about this.
Yeah, it's very true. And I think that depending on how you are as an individual, I don't mean you, but I mean people generally, what I found is that it's very hard with some people when you become a mentor to them or a coach to them, because they're not used to having the level of detail or the level of questions put at them, where they're even used to having their opinion put forward, or even used to thinking for themselves in a way where you would naturally be asking them lots of open and structured questions to ensure that it's a sort of non-directive approach. Because otherwise you just end up telling, and then that, you know, 90, as I've researched, that 90% of all information is lost in a week if you don't reinforce the message. So if you just sit and do some training or coaching and tell somebody something for half an hour, you know, and I've learned this through training lots of people I know in my life, family, personal, where they just don't they don't listen. But the reverse is also true. When you ask lots of questions to get the answer you want, some people are like, what are you asking me all these questions for? Just tell me. This doesn't make any sense. I've never thought about it like that. So you strike me as someone that's got quite a clear idea of what you want from a relationship as a mentoree. So if you were to work with a mentor, you, like me, I know what I'm looking for from the mentors I have, I know what I want.
Absolutely.
So I'm able to reverse it back to myself in order to make it clear so they can help me.
Yeah.
But if you're an individual that's got no experience of that and maybe has never even been asked, you know, what truly inspires you? What truly motivates you? What are your passions? What would you really love to do? Because they may never have been asked. Then it's much harder to extrapolate or get that information out of an individual, if you like. I think for me then, you sound like you have mentors now. What advice would you have for people looking for a mentor? You know, what sort of things should they look for? What sort of advice would you give to people who are looking to maybe go down that route?
I think one of the core ideas that is very important is that you do not only need to have one mentor. You're not going to marry that person. And it's okay to have multiple mentors. You're not I don't want to use any swear words, but it's okay to have, right?
Yeah.
It's nothing that you sign and you get a ring or you, I don't know, fully commit to it and there's nobody else in your life. You can have a mentor for, I don't know, your personal growth. You can have a business mentor. You can have a mentor who helps you with, I don't know, for example, my femininity. I needed a mentor in that area because I never had a big sister. And my mom is a very pragmatic, amazing woman, but there are a lot of things that I needed to learn, right? So I found a mentor who helps me in this area. And so that's the first thing. You do not need to have one mentor. It's okay to have many mentors. And the second thing, which is also very important, there are still a lot of people who approach me with sentences like, Natalia, could you be my mentor? And I mean, beautiful, my ego feels flattered, fantastic, but you create work for me because I now need to study you and your profile and I need to make assumptions on what you're good at. And then I need to think about where I could use you or like what the benefit is for me. So instead of, you know, bombarding somebody or just saying it out loud, why don't you study the profile of that person, figure out what they're good at, figure out what they cannot do, and then approach the person and say, listen, I love what you do. I realized you're good at so-and-so. You could need help in this area. By the way, I'm the expert on that. Would you be interested in a reverse mentoring relationship? Let's have a 10-minute call. Wow, if somebody approaches me like that, I'm like, this person knows what he or she wants.
Yeah, it's very true. Yeah, and I think that, well, I mean, all the studies that I'm doing, all the people that I'm talking to at the moment are typically coaches or mentors from outside. They may have some connection with the recruitment industry, but the reason for the podcast is to find people who are doing coaching outside of the recruitment industry. Mm-hmm. So I guess while we're on that topic, what's it like? What sort of coaching or personal branding work are you doing for? Is all of your work with corporations or is some of it individual to individual? Can you give us a bit of an idea of where you do your coaching and personal branding and LinkedIn influencing work?
Sure. So I have done one-on-one consulting for 2.5-3 years right now. And I reached a level in which I still love it, but I'm a little bit frustrated with the impact that I can have. So I hired a marketer who currently helps me with scaling my business. So next week, I'm going to launch a group consulting program, which will be ongoing. So I'll be able to help even more people. And then there are some companies that regularly hire me for a keynote, for a training, for a project in which I focus on teaching people how to build a personal brand, how to market themselves, and again, with a focus on LinkedIn.
Okay. And the companies that are hiring you, they are looking for you to build the individuals in that company their own personal brand, therefore making them bigger than the company itself?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, these companies that hire me, they understand that people follow people and that great marketing is about telling stories. And that especially on LinkedIn, for example, individual accounts are followed up to 10 times more than a company page.
Yeah, so, I know.
So this whole thing makes sense from a marketing point of view to spread your stories and, you know, use your employees as brand ambassadors. But it also makes sense from an HR point of view, because when you have representative and happy employees, then through that, you can also use this message to hire new people, because especially my generation and younger, we don't look at web pages. We scan the web pages of potential companies. I look at the people who are there. I look at what they post. And when they don't look happy, when I don't see that there are beanbags and free coffee and, I don't know, jelly beans, I exaggerate at the moment, then yeah. I will not hire, you know, I will not apply there. I want to see that you have an amazing company culture, and I want to see that on social media channels. So these are just two reasons why it makes sense to invest in the personal brands of your employees and use their stories to drive more profit, to create an amazing culture and boost your recruiting.
And I think that's a really fascinating point, because you mentioned two bits there that I think are really interesting. First one, the fact that your generation and younger don't look at web pages. So I sort of look at the LinkedIn company page, unless you're a mega, right? I mean, unless you're a FTSE 100 or you're NASDAQ 100 or you're a FTSE 250 company, where you're always going to have millions of followers on your pages because you're just that big. You're just in, you know, you're almost in everybody's house. You know, like McDonald's, you know, you or Coca-Cola or Pepsi, you're so big that you're everywhere. So people naturally will follow you, right? Or at least like the page. Mm-hmm. But if you're not, then I look at the LinkedIn page, company page, the same as the way I look at websites now. And that is that they're very hard to get people to go to when, and I'll give you an example. My 6-year-old uses voice recognition to search on Google. Right. So she won't, you know, so soon that will be voice recognition through an app on a phone. It will never be through a website. Eventually there will be no, I don't think there'll be website. There may be, but so for me, I find that really interesting, because the marketing of a company is now related to the people you have in it rather than what you put on your website as to what you say you do.
Yeah.
And even if you have a website and you promote what you do, if you then correlate that with the people in the company, like you said you would do, you would look at the employees to see what they're doing. If they don't match up, people won't naturally apply.
Yeah.
And I was expecting you to say pool table or foosball table or gym or whatever, but it's quite funny, because I actually was talking to somebody recently who was interviewing people to join their company in a recruitment company. And they were asking, you know, how you move forward and the progression and everything like that. So recruitment's a great industry, because you can move from sort of literally zero or no skill. I joined in 2005 with no experience, and within 3 years I was a manager of 8-10 people. So you can go up the ladder really quickly. And every recruitment business is the same if you perform at a high level. But the reason I mentioned this point is one girl was talking about the fact that she was saying, well, if I come in and join the company and all of these things sound really amazing, do I still move up the ladder within 3 years and get all these things even if I don't perform? Will I naturally get my pay rises and I'll double my salary and I'll move forward? And we were like, it's kind of related to the performance bit. That bit's kind of essential. Yeah. So if you don't hit target, so then you start to have to question whether that person wants to work in sales. So then it's a different conversation, right? So it's not a conversation then around recruitment or do you want to work in this job? It's more, do you want to work in an environment where I'm going to ask you to perform and your performance is you need to make yourself, us and the company money so that you can progress? And then it was like, that's not really what I want to do. I want to progress. I want to move up. I want my salary to double in 3 years. I want all those benefits, but I don't want to be as accountable to that as I would be if I had a sales target. And it was a really interesting moment, because we were like, do people not understand that one goes with the other? It's business, right? When you work in business, businesses don't work without money, you know. I wish they did.
I know what you mean. I had this conversation with my brother earlier last week, and he said that there are a lot of people, apparently that's what he read, I don't know what he has the source from, but he said that there are a lot of people, actually younger people, who have a lot of followers on Instagram. So once they enter a company, they assume that the whole company loves them and respects them as much as their followers, and they just get naturally promoted because they're so Instagrammable. And I was like, no. And my brother apparently said that that's the case. I'm like, I need to research on that.
Yeah, but that's that's a whole nother subject. That, there you go. See this, you know, when we talked about earlier, there's a subject there already. That's a podcast on its own. You know, is your personal offline profile of any value to the company that pays you money on a daily basis? Well, maybe the smart company would be if it's about personal branding, right? But maybe maybe it's not. But that's a whole nother, we could talk about that forever. So you obviously have your own business now and have done for the last 4.5 years, and it looks like it's going great, but you don't come from a sales background, okay? So what advice, so how did you go about sales? You know, you're not from recruitment, you're a coach, you're a mentor, you're a personal brand strategist, you've had a successful business now for 4.5 years, but no background in sales. So how did you make that happen?
I, again, had a long conversation with myself and with the universe, and I said, listen, allow me to be so great, to be so awesome, teach me what I need to do that I turn into a client magnet. And for the one-on-one coach consulting, it was enough. So literally, just in quotation marks, through my daily content and through my speaking gigs and whatever, I would get between 3 to 7 leads per week of people who want to work with me. So I didn't do any sales. They would call me and they would be just, how much is it and when do we start? And in the majority of cases, I would close them. So, but now when I want to scale that to the next level, I said, I have no clue how to do that. So this is why I hired an expert who takes me by the hand and tells me, Natalia, that's what you need to do. And the next step, you need to do that. And I'm like, oh my God, isn't that, are you sure? And he's like, I have 10 years experience. I'm like, okay, I trust you. So I first learned that you need to have a clear sales funnel. So you need to have something where you collect these people. Let me start a second before that. When you create content on social media, one of my friends said, you make it rain. And it's fantastic. Everybody loves the rain. People are going out there dancing in the rain. But when you do not collect these raindrops somehow, you know, it will dry. And then why did you put in so much effort in making rain? So you need to collect these raindrops somehow. So either you have different small pots or you create one huge pot. And so now I'm working on this huge pot that will get all of the raindrops in there, and then I qualify them, and then we turn them hopefully into paying clients. So first thing is find a sales funnel, create one instead of many complicated ones, especially when you start in the beginning. Second thing is, especially in the beginning, have scripts. Write down what you want to say, know the closing techniques, think about, you know, rejections or things that people will not agree with or their insecurities or whatever it is. And the third step, test them and then improve them. Do that on your own until you really found the secret sauce. And after that, hire somebody who's a setter and maybe even a closer, or you stay the closer depending on your business. That's what I've learned over the last weeks.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that those 3 or 4 things there are very relevant to recruitment, both the funnel, how to collect the information, where to put it, what to do with it, and then having all the things that people could potentially say in order to overcome what you're offering.
Yeah.
You know, when inherently everybody is programmed to say no from the moment they can speak, you're programmed to say no. So your default option for everything in life will always be no. Everybody, you know, that's one of the first things I was taught in recruitment. That's always going to happen. Everyone's going to say no. Your job is to influence them to say yes. They just don't know it yet, you know, because the fact that you're talking to them means that they're interested. Exactly. If they weren't interested, they would just not be talking to you. You know, it's the same in anything. If you want to buy something, you go online, you buy it. You go into a shop, you buy it. You don't need someone to come over and say, do you need any help buying that? You're like, no. You always say no, right? Then 2 minutes later, you go and buy the thing that you went in there to buy. So, for me, I'm fascinated how the new way of making, what really interests me is whether the information that people we're talking about today can help the recruitment industry to evolve its model to become more inbound than outbound.
Mm.
Ultimately.
Well, see, I don't know. I think there's a lot of change going on right now in the online world, the way how we sell, the way how we buy. the way how businesses function. I think that experts from all of these fields need to sit together and find the best solutions, exchange ideas, and then create something awesome.
Yeah, because, you know, for me, I'm from the old school, right? I mean, I started when there was no internet, no LinkedIn, no social, zero, absolutely nothing. Yeah. You know, I mean, you were probably still in uni. So this was a long time ago, right? And but then it was actually, I think this, the same dynamics are still true now. And that is that you still want to be talking to, or we do, talking to and headhunting the best people in the market. The challenge is getting to them now without them feeling like that their data is being, you know, vindicated or always is being breached because of things like GDPR and things like Facebook and the scandals that are everywhere at the moment. It's become even harder to call someone when you know what you're offering them is of value. It's just they don't like the fact that you're calling them without their permission. But if you message them and ask for permission, they say no, then it's the end of the process. So it's a little bit counter. It is a little bit, it doesn't seem to make sense that there's almost no way of getting to somebody now without feeling like you're breaching their data. LinkedIn have made some great changes around, you know, you download people's content, now you don't get email addresses. Before you used to be able to get it. So you have to do so much more effort into being in front of your market, whatever your market is. You know, yours is, so if you say you want to be in personal branding, then you should probably spend a year talking about being in personal branding so that when someone says, I want you to help me with my personal branding, you know, they look at you and go, yeah, I can do it for you. And then it's, you know, it's X amount per hour or per day or per week or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. So thinking about, you know, the stage of your career that you're in, it's obviously a very online world at the moment. What advice do you have for people who want to stand out?
I think it's important that you understand what your platform is. So instead of being everywhere on social media, choose your platform. And this decision is based on what the kind of content is that you create. So is it videos? Is it podcasts? Is it articles? And it also depends on where your target audience is. So are you targeting teenagers? Are you targeting millennials? Are you targeting baby boomers? In which country? This is the first step that I would take, and then absolutely master and nail that one. Once you've done it, go on to the second platform.
Okay. And what about individuals who may be a bit camera shy, who don't want to go down this route? So, you know, and then, but there are still other forms of content, there are other ways to get a message out. What advice do you have for those individuals? Because, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to listen to this and go, well, I don't want to be on camera and I don't want to be on video and I don't want to, you know, so that, but I still need, but I'm still living in this world, which is, you know, if you follow people like Gary Vee or Neil Patel, you have to be in this content rich world. But if you don't like that part of the world, then how do you stand out if you're not online, or if you don't like video, for example?
Well, you can always start with a podcast. So through the podcast, I'll be able to get to know you, to understand you. I think that everything that is more than written gives me so much more information about you, because our language is diverse. It's not only the letters and the words, it's also the mimics, the body language, the vocal variety. So the more of that you show me, the better I'll be able to understand who you are, what you do, how you are, if you're being funny, if you're being sarcastic, if you're being positive or negative. So if you say video is too much, then start with something audio, which could be, for example, a podcast, or you simply speak into your microphone and then just take a picture and somebody merges that, so you upload that as a video. That could be the start. You could also start with 15 seconds mini videos and Insta stories. They also disappear within 24 hours. So this way you will slowly but surely train it. And in a third step after that, start with interviewing people. Talk about the questions before that. Do one dry round and then film it. And then once you've done that, after that, you can start, you know, getting in front of the camera. It's a process. It's a journey.
Okay. One thing I'm really interested in, and you may be able to help me with this, the keynote part, this bit for me, because we've talked a bit about coaching, your consulting and what you do. We talked about personal branding. But the keynote part for me is really interesting, because I think that in order to develop in any industry, there's still a lot of the majority of the world is still historically in the old way, even though the internet and the revolution we're in at the moment has been over the last sort of 10 years, and really with the social platforms over the last 5 or 6, 7 years. But there's still still a very big part of the world that's still in the, I like to go to an event, I like to go to an exhibition, a conference, again. How did you get into the keynote part? Because that bit for me is really interesting, because I'm looking to get into that. But also I'd like to know how you got it into your industry, and whether there's any sort of tricks of the trade that I could then potentially apply, or we could apply to the recruitment industry, to see whether people might be able to find out how they might be able to get into that. So how did you get into it?
So I trained everything on Toastmasters International, and I followed Tim Ferriss' strategy. So he taught me that life is all about perception, right? So I made sure that when he's amazing. So I delivered my speeches, which were all in this safe environment and club, and I started to make sure that I get pictures and videos out of that and started uploading them on social media. Then after 1.5 years, people, the first speaking gig came. And what I also started doing, because that's exactly what Tim said, is go to local universities and business schools, and maybe even small companies or small events or anything, and tell them that you're going to speak for free as long as you're allowed to film and record it. And then you take one of your best friends who is a, cameraman or woman and videographer, and you take all of that material, and then you publish that on social media again. And you do that for quite some time, until people will approach you and pay you. They don't need to know that you weren't paid or getting paid for the first speaking gigs. You had pictures of yourself as a speaker out there. Wow, impressive.
Yeah, no, interesting. Okay.
Life hack at its best.
Very much so, yeah. And Toastmasters, is that something you researched online? I mean, I think I've heard the name before. Are they everywhere? Is it just in Dubai, or how did you end up with them?
They're everywhere. It's an American nonprofit organization, and their target is to help people becoming better communicators and leaders. So for the first time, I heard that term on social media. So one of the people that I used to follow very, very intensively back then, Lewis House. So he was talking about the fact that once he went through a career change, he didn't know what to do. And then he somehow realized he needs to become a speaker, and he joined Toastmasters. So I saved that information. And funnily enough, 2 days later was the day when my friend approached me and told me, Natalia, do you know what you need to do next? Which was then joining Toastmasters. So I was like, okay, universe, I got it. Apparently it's a signal, so that's why I need to join them. So this is the whole story around it.
Ah, very good. And do you get up and present anything you want, or they give you the subjects, or how does it work?
So you get a manual. I know that they changed right now, but this is how it was when I was still an active member of them. So you got a manual with 10 different steps, and you would have to deliver a speech every week or every 2 weeks, and was a different length. So in the beginning, you just started with speaking. And for the second speech, you needed to structure it. And they taught you how to structure it. And then for the third speech, you would have to learn how to use metaphors and whatever, storytelling. And then you would learn how to use your body language and how to persuade people and how to motivate them. So with every speech, it would get a little bit more complicated, but you generally had the opportunity to speak about things that are important to you.
Cool. I'm definitely going to check that out, because the reason I'm asking these questions is a lot of the training work we're doing at the moment is related to all of the things that are very pertinent at the moment, and that is, how do you create more inbound knowledge or inbound calls or inbound marketing for yourself without, so that you can pick up the phone less. But still be recognized as a leader in your space. So obviously we've got video, which we talked about. You do videos, I do videos. You've got audio, which we've covered, which is podcasts. Have you got a podcast?
Yeah, I've just launched a German one, yeah.
Okay, cool, yeah. So I've got one too, because you're on it today. And then obviously the final one is the written word, which is either sort of long form and or short form content on LinkedIn. So those three things kind of cover my strategy of sort of video, audio, written, and it's good to have that reaffirmed by someone that's nothing to do with recruitment but has the same strategy. Therefore, we know that generates inbound activity. We don't know what it is yet, and in recruitment it's really hard to know what kind of inbound activity you'll get, but one thing is important is that if you don't do it, no one will know what you're talking about or what you're doing. And then the third one is people are asking us, well, how do I get into separating myself or speaking potentially at conferences that relate to my market? You know, so it depends on whether you recruit in HR or finance or legal or sales. It doesn't really matter. Mm. All of these industries, whether they're support functions or tech functions or logistic functions, they all have conferences. They all have some kind of weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually meetups or events. And they have lots of different speakers from everywhere. So there is an opportunity if you're in recruitment or as a thought leader to speak at these events and then make yourself different from not only just turning up and giving out business cards.
And
for me, I'm always looking at, you know, how do you have that extra bit that no one else has in an online world where everybody has the same?
Very, very true. So go out there and find these conferences.
Yeah, because it never used to be like that. In the old days, to be good, you just had to pick up the phone, headhunt people. You got through to better people, and that was how you stood out. Now, the first five objections everyone will give us are the same. Therefore, you can't overcome them because everybody has the same thing. So you get right down into that sort of advanced objection handling right at the beginning, because you know the first five things you're going to talk about, they're the same for everyone, you know, whereas before it never used to be.
Change the game. Get yourself on a stage and become a lead magnet. Become a magnet so that people approach you afterwards.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Dr. Natalia, I really appreciate you being on the show. I know that you obviously got a busy schedule. Thank you very much for all of your insights. I found that very valuable. I'll definitely connect up with you and chat to you offline about some of the things we've talked about, because there's a few things in there that I'd like to explore with you on a personal branding level.
Yeah.
Because there's a few things that I'm thinking about that you might be able to help me with, you know, when we talked about the sort of mentoree side of it. So I'll send you a message on that separately. Obviously have a great day. Anything else you wanna add at the end?
Personal branding is very, very important. It's not an option, it's a must today. I mean, in the end, personal branding is what people say about you when you're not in the room, right? That's what Jeff Bezos said. So instead of asking, do I really need a personal brand? Understand that you have one. And if you decide to work on it, you actually take ownership of your life and you'll be able to design the end results in your private and your business life that you want.
Yeah, so that's a very good way to finish. I like that. Okay, cool. I'm going to let you get on with your day. Thank you so much for being on the show. Obviously, have a great day.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
See you later. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.